Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855am, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. My name is Mark, and as it's National Volunteers Week, I thought I'd catch up with the coordinators, Lauren and Leanne, along with two volunteers, Hans and Bridget, from a program called Life in Community. They're going to share what the program involves and what it's like to volunteer with Life in Community. So first of all, thank you and for joining us today at Brainwaves. And yeah, welcome to the show. Perhaps everyone can introduce themselves before we talk about the Life in Community program. So yeah, first of all, to get us started, Leanne, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm Leanne. I'm the Link Volunteer Coordinator for the Eastern Region in Melbourne. I've been doing that for just over 5 years, so, and enjoy it very much.
And Lauren.
Yes, hello. I am Lauren. I'm the coordinator for Link in the northwestern region of Melbourne. And I've been in this position for coming up to 4 years. Yeah.
All right. And our volunteers, Hans.
My name's Hans, and I've been a volunteer with the Link program for just under 2 years, I think it is. And I'm retired, so it's something that I wanted to do and I'm enjoying it.
Fantastic. And lastly, Bridget, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a volunteer for Link in the Eastern Region. So I'm with Leanne, and I've been volunteering for, I think, coming up to 3 years now.
All right, so Lauren and Leanne, how would you describe the Life in Community program to someone who has never heard of it before?
You go, Lauren.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Link program is, it's a three-month program that we offer to participants who have just had a stay in one of our parks. So Wellways run a number of park programs across Melbourne, which is a residential rehabilitation program, really, that people stay for anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks. And that program, once they've finished that program, we offer them to be part of the Link program. And what's involved is they're matched up with a volunteer who meets them in the community each week or each fortnight across a three-month period. And the volunteer assists them to research, locate and access activities and community groups in their local neighbourhood that increase their connection to their local community and increase their sense of belonging. So it's very varied in terms of what's specifically involved. It really depends on the person and what interests them.
Mm. And Hans, how have you found your volunteering experience with Life in Community so far?
Quite interesting, quite varied too, because I requested start of the program, of joining the program, to be linked up with men 45 or over, And it's varied depending on their experiences, but I really enjoyed it. I've probably enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I'm generally fairly laid back, but yeah, really enjoy the difference. And it's opened my eyes. I thought I was fairly experienced in life, but it's opened my eyes up a little bit wider.
And Bridget, how have you enjoyed the program so far as a volunteer?
It's been great. I think one of the best parts of it is just being exposed to all the sort of things that happen in your community that you might not be aware of. It sort of forces you to really research and come up with some low cost ideas of activities to do with your participant. And it's a great way for like, I don't know, I found that I've really gotten to know actually what's happening around me that I probably wouldn't otherwise know about. And yeah, it's just great to get to know this person and build a relationship with this person. It's really meaningful.
You mentioned that you've sort of, it's given you opportunity to discover things about the community you weren't aware of. What can you give me an example of what you have sort of discovered thanks to, yeah, your volunteering experience here?
One that was really good and we sort of kept going back to a few times was often sort of libraries will run community groups. And there was like a well-being group, I think it was based in Boronia, that was really lovely. And it was sort of just a group of all different people from the community coming together just to like play board games, do different activities, learn different sort of artistic skills, completely free. And it was so much fun, and it's just something I never would have considered doing, but I was so glad that I got to do it.
Leanne, prior to becoming a life and community volunteer coordinator, what was your background and had you always worked in mental health focused roles and with volunteers?
I've mostly worked in the not-for-profit and public sector. Corporate life wasn't for me, too dressy up. I don't know. I like to do good work. So most recently, I guess, as in the last 10 years or so, I was the general manager at Switchboard, which is the state's LGBTIQ plus phone counselling service. And that's a volunteer service, peer volunteer service. And we also started up a program called Out and About, which is very similar to Link. And it's volunteers meeting one-on-one with older members of the community, whether that's in aged care or at home. So, yeah, a lot of volunteer experience. And I guess, like a lot of volunteer coordinators, I've been a volunteer myself. It's sort of helpful, but also I think when your mind's in that space, that's where you come from. And I was an on-air presenter plus a board member for Joy Community Radio Station.
Right. Was that the volunteering that you took part in that you was you were for? Yeah.
So I've done other bits and pieces over the years. Interestingly, lots about community connection, so it must be my passion.
And what about you, Lauren? Has mental health and disability always been important to you? And how did your life bring you to this point?
It has always been important to me, and it's something that I've always been drawn to ever since I discovered the topic of psychology in high school. I was very drawn to it. But yeah, I've worked in the community mental health field for the past 11 years now, and the last 8 of those have been in parks, so in various different roles, so in the park facilities. But yeah, I really love the park program and everything it stands for. It's just, yeah, it's really wholesome and really, yeah, we just see a lot of beautiful stories come out of parks. And there's also mental illness in my family, so it's really meaningful to me to be involved in this type of work and supporting people who are living with a mental health diagnosis. But yeah, in terms of the Link coordinator role, yeah, started in this role a few years back. And yeah, it's just been great for me to build my skills and challenge myself a little bit. That's the first time I've worked in a volunteer program. And It's wonderful so far.
For any of our listeners who might not know what PARCs are, what are PARCs and how do they work?
Yeah, so PARC is an acronym it's PARC, Prevention and Recovery Care. And it is, most of them are 10-bed facility that's staffed 24 hours. There's two teams who work in collaboration at each PARC. It's a community mental health team, so either Wellways or another community mental health organisation. And there's also the local hospital. They have a clinical team who work on site there, so it might be registered nurses or psychiatrists, consultant psychiatrist, or other sort of clinical specialists, I guess, social work or psychologist, etc. And the two teams work in collaboration to provide 24-hour support, quite intensive, personalised support to people who stay there for a couple of weeks and work on individual recovery goals.
And you mentioned this before briefly, but what areas of Melbourne are served by the Life in Community program?
So at the moment, there's two of our regions. So I've got the eastern region. So I go Box Hill out to Warburton, which is a fair hike. And our area mental health service is through Eastern Health, which has got a few hospitals, Box Hill and Maroondah. And Lauren is in the northwest, and you go out from?
Yeah, from basically stretching from Brunswick or Fitzroy area all the way up to Whittlesea and a little bit sort of out towards Camberwell, Hawthorne Way as well. So it's sort of like a little C shape, but yeah, it's far reaching.
And how are volunteers paired with participants? Do the coordinators take into account whether there'll be an overlap in personality and interests, and what happens if a volunteer is paired with a participant but they, you know, don't click for whatever reason?
Yeah, well, I guess discussing the locations is a big one, because geographic location is a factor in what we call the matching process, because obviously we don't want people having to travel too far for what might be a fairly short meeting. But also it's about local area. So like as Bridget was saying, it's about what's happening around your area or around the participants' area. So that's the focus. When we match, it's about that. It's about the preferences of the participant in terms of gender identity, age group, that sort of thing. Certainly what their interests are and what they want to achieve, their goals, their recovery goals as well. So it might be about, I have to say, there's probably a standard three or four that we read on the referral form, which is usually get out more, get fit, which is, you know, probably goals for all of us. Join a group, take up an activity or a sport, or I think the last one is, I don't know, you tell me what I can do. So that's where the pressure's on the volunteer a little bit.
All right. And what about in those when you receive a referral and someone's a bit unsure of what they can expect from it, have they discovered anything through the process of becoming part of the Life in Community program as a participant? Yeah.
That not everyone is suitable to be referred to the program. So that work is done at PARC with a recovery worker. And if they're in the discussions with the participant, find that that person would benefit from perhaps some social support or building more social connection. And we've got quite a bit of info sheets that we give to people that sort of help, I guess, with the expectations of the program. And we talk as well, Lauren and I visit the parks and talk to the participants and the workers there about the program. In my experience, people have been a little bit unsure of what to expect, because it's not like having a worker, you know, who's going to drive you shopping or take you to a medical appointment. And it's not like having a psychologist's appointment where you're going to talk about your mental health and all your feelings. So it's a sort of a bit like, I don't know, we haven't come up with a great word, a professional friend or a buddy or something like that. And I think it takes a little time to establish that sort of rapport and relationship.
Yeah, and what happens if a volunteer is paired with a participant and they don't click? Is that something that happens, or And how was that sort of situation navigated?
Yeah, sometimes that definitely is the case, and you know, on paper, two people might look like they're going to be a great match and they're going to get along really well, but when we always start the match with a meet and greet, which is a very sort of low pressure, casual catch up, usually over a coffee, where the participant and the volunteer can just get a bit of a sense of each other and see how things flow. And we always make it clear that there's no pressure on either of them to commit to the match or commit to meeting that person again if for whatever reason they don't feel like it, they click. We always encourage people to be honest about what feels comfortable for them, and you know, we want them to be happy in the match and to feel comfortable.
And I think you've sort of answered this question to some extent, but what activities can volunteers and participants take part in during a session, and are there things that they can't do?
Well, I guess as Bridge alluded to, we try and keep the activities no cost or low cost for, I guess, obvious reasons that no one's got any money these days. But we also want to make things sustainable for the participants. As Lauren said, it's a 3-month program. So we would hope that the activities that they undertake or try for the first time can be, you know, kept going. So it can be everything from just a walk. I've even had someone borrow their cousin's dog so that they could walk with the dog in the park. So that was cool. To the library, to neighbourhood houses, art groups, indoor rock climbing. Lauren, you've had a few weird and wonderful ones too.
I have. I've had somebody who wanted to be matched with someone who knew how to play a specific card game, so they could go to the underground meets where they play the card game at bars and things. But some other people have just wanted to find a book club or find somewhere they can take, you know, reconnect with a hobby that they used to enjoy years ago and have lost touch with. So it's really, it's a bit of a mixed bag. It's whatever ideas that the participant has, we will try our best to work with them.
Exactly. I remember I had one once where the guy was very interested and very good at art. And I think having the match with his volunteer gave him some confidence. And when the match finished, he discussed with his worker about incorporating art into more of the things that he does. And it actually ended up that the worker and this fellow ran some classes at the local centre where they were. So he actually extended that into not only doing what he loved, but to be helping other people. So
how are boundaries established and maintained between volunteers and participants?
I can answer this one. Boundaries are a really big part of this kind of work, and these kinds of, I guess, partnerships or relationships. It's the participant and volunteer relationship is really unique, because whilst it is a professional relationship, it can definitely mirror a friendship in many ways. So we provide training to the volunteers when they commence around effective ways to protect their own sort of energy and their privacy in these interactions, and their time as well, because they're giving their time for free. We want to make sure that that's not taken advantage of. But so we set out program guidelines at the start of each match, things like things that keep the interactions professional, like meeting in public places rather than at the participant's home, not providing transport to participants, And the volunteers and participants only really know each other by their first name and perhaps the suburb that they live in. So we try to ensure that, you know, they're only talking about and discussing topics which are quite general and sort of not delving into talking about specific things about their recovery or their mental health, things like that. We try to sort of keep it quite general, just for everybody's safety, I guess. And volunteers, some volunteers are trained or studying in the mental health field, but it's not a requirement. So we try to make that clear at the start. Were you going to add something, Leanne?
I was just going to say we sort of do say about not giving advice and that sort of thing. But also at the meet and greets, I sort of try and have a bit of an informal contract where I say to both the participant and volunteer that the conversations you have might accidentally venture into territory that's a little bit uncomfortable. And so, and I don't think people do that on purpose. It's just a bit of unknown. We don't know where these discussions are going to take us. And that if it is a little bit uncomfortable for someone, they're triggered or it's something they don't want to go into, that they have an agreement where they can just say, hey, I really just don't want to go there at the moment, and just be respectful of that. So it could be talking about family. It could be talking about why you're in hospital, you know, which football team you're back for. Who knows what, you know, triggers people.
Mm. But, yeah, so when you know, difficult situations do occur, are there opportunities for volunteers and coordinators to debrief and reflect with one another about a particular situation?
In terms of the volunteers, our doors are always open for volunteers to talk to us about any situations. After each meeting, the volunteer submits a short sort of report about what happened. And one of the questions around that is, do they have any issues? Given that that's not necessarily the format that people want to discuss things, if Lauren and I aren't available, we do have a hierarchy of support in place to support the volunteer, because we don't know what's going to happen out there. I mean, I have to say I've never experienced an incident at all, but we don't know. So, yeah, we have other Listen Well coordinators that are there to support people, plus also as an organisation we have our employee assistance program, which is open to volunteers, which is a 24/7 free and confidential counselling service. So hopefully the supports are there if they need them. But, of course, if something did happen when we weren't available, we would certainly follow up with them and make sure they're okay.
Hans, could you share a memorable experience you've had since volunteering with Life in Community?
Yes. One of the things with the participant I'm meeting with at the moment, and there are a whole range of issues that participant faces, but we really enjoy, and it sounds simplistic, but we really enjoy talking about sport. He loves sport. He watches a lot of it. I love sport, and I sort of follow it where I can, so... And we do barrack for different AFL teams, so that spices up the conversation quite often. And it's memorable for me because I realise that there's ways that people can use. I can't really go to many places with participant because his mobility is sort of limited and strained, but what it means is we can enjoy a really good laugh. We stir each other. We talk about things that we both understand, and it's as simple as that. And that makes it. I often leave, and you know, he's got a smile on his face. I'm quite happy. You know, we get along well enough now to sort of stir each other a little bit about it, Yeah, I find it's something as simple as that is really enjoyable for me, and from what I've got to know about him, it's enjoyable for him amidst you know, quite a few issues that he's trying to deal with on a daily basis.
And Bridget, could you share some memorable experiences you've had since joining the Life and Community team?
I mean, there's been a lot, but one that sort of stands out is I went bouldering with a participant, which is like indoor rock climbing but without any harness. So you're sort of just free climbing on these walls, which is a bit scary, but a really good way to sort of break the ice, have a laugh at ourselves, at each other. And that was great fun. And usually at those places, you can also sort of go off to the side and play like some board games too. So that was a really fun experience with the participant. With another participant, we also often went to op shops, and we'd go to sort of different little areas that had quirky little op shops, and it was always fun to just go and have a browse and look at the interesting and sort of random things in there. And that was a really fun way to connect as well. Yeah.
So, Hans, why is volunteering important to you?
It's important to me because I worked in as a teacher and assistant principal and a student wellbeing coordinator. Not all at the same time, but, you know, for 40 years with the education department. And I always enjoyed working with young people. And, you know, unlike most of the population, I actually enjoyed working with teenagers, found them a laugh. But what I realized was it's very easy for people to sort of get lost, have a challenge, have something go wrong. And it's really important to be able to be able to support them in that way. So I think that's the reason why I chose to get involved, just to try and give something back, whatever, however little it is.
So so this is a question for you, Bridget. Why is volunteering important to you?
Yeah, I think volunteering sort of gives you a chance to do something good for others, which is like one of the easiest things you can do to feel good about yourself and boost your own mental health. So it has a really good effect in that way. Another thing about volunteering is just seeing the way that you can impact another person's life in a really valuable way, even if it's small. Being able to see that impact on someone else is really important, and it shows you to yourself that you are important, that you can improve someone's life in this way. So I think, yeah, it's while it, one part of it is it's a great difference to someone else's life, it also makes like me feel really good about myself. So, yeah.
Bridget, if any of our listeners have thought about volunteering, but don't know where to start, what advice would you give them?
If they want to volunteer, like for Link in particular, I think what I did was just submit an inquiry online. Just look it up on Google, and there should be a little form to fill out, and then you'll most likely get a call from either Leanne or Lauren, and you can have a chat with them and discuss sort of any concerns or questions you have. And they're really welcoming. It's really non-intimidating. So, yeah, that's probably where I'd start.
And if any of our listeners have thought about volunteering but don't know where to start, what advice would you give them, Hans?
Contact a group like Wellways. For me, it was as simple as that. I didn't know what Wellways was or that it existed. I didn't know what a park was or that they existed. But just get in touch with local, you know, wellbeing services if you're interested. Volunteering, search volunteering on, you know, even the Victorian Government website. You know, just find out, ask questions, because if it's not Link, it could be something else that you end up being connected to. And really, even when I was working full-time
An hour a week or an hour a fortnight is really not a lot to give back. So, yeah, I think that's what I'd tell them.
Lauren and Leanne, earlier in the interview, I asked Bridget and Hans to share some memorable experiences they had as volunteers. But do you have any memorable experiences to share from your time coordinating the Life in Community program?
I can go first.
You go, Lauren.
Sure. But when I was having a think about this, and to be honest, the most memorable experiences I've had across the 4 years I've been in this role is there's definitely been times where the participant and volunteer have kind of been taken by surprise a little bit by how much they've actually gained from the experience and how much of a connection they've formed in such a short time. And there's definitely been times where that has, you know, we have a meeting at the end of the match. We call it an evaluation meeting. It's where we just sort of sum up the experience, reflect on what they achieved together, and we talk about, you know, what they're taking away from their time together. And there are times when that's actually quite moving for them. And there's been times where the participant has become a little bit emotional, like talking about what it's meant to them. And I'm such a softie. There's actually been times where it's moved me in turn. So, yeah, I think they're probably the most memorable experiences for me when I've really been touched by something I've witnessed.
And I was just having a look through some of the comments that we've had during the evaluation meetings. And, you know, I've had a volunteer say that their aim was to build rapport and just to see someone smile and do something for someone else. And participants saying they learnt not to be so hard on themselves or to feel shame, and that loneliness can have a negative impact when you're just with your own thoughts, but being with somebody else, you realise that they're actually wonderful people out there and it's not all scary, and it just takes some patience and kindness and time, which, you know, are pretty basic things. But I know I've had participants say they can't believe someone's volunteering their time to spend with them, that they're not a worker, they're not being paid. And I'm like, no. And they actually value the fact that someone's volunteering their time more than a worker. I'm not saying that workers don't do a good job, but, you know, there's that element of it's their job when they're being paid to do it. But to actually say this person is giving up whatever time they could be doing something else to spend with me is such a confidence builder and such a motivator. And I think in turn it helps people see what then they can offer back to community as well. So, yeah.
And how often does Life in Community recruit new volunteers, and how can people apply?
Well, we probably recruit twice a year. As Bridget said, there's actually a general inquiry form for volunteering, because WorldWays run a number of volunteer programs. That's on the WorldWays website. But when we're specifically doing a recruitment drive, we'll do that through Seek Volunteer and put it up on the careers page on the WorldWays website as well, with a bit of a spiel about what we're looking for. We don't call it position description anymore, but a bit more of a information around what the role entails and how to apply and that sort of thing. So, like all organisations, we require a level of compliance to be completed now. So that's like National Police check, Working with Children check, NDIS worker check. But it's either free for volunteers, or if it's not free, we'll always pay for those.
And what are the prerequisites for becoming a volunteer with the program?
Being wonderful, isn't it, Lauren? That's what we just like. If you're wonderful, well.
There aren't really any sort of specific prerequisites that we need people to have. It's more just being the type of person who wants to help and who's willing to learn and make themselves available for people. So the program does attract a lot of people who are studying social sciences or anything in the field, but it's definitely not a necessity. If you've got like I said, if you've got the time and you want to give to others, and yeah, you meet the criteria basically. We're just looking for warm, kind, giving people.
We do have an interview, so it's not everyone necessarily, you know, gets a Guernsey. But I think one of the things that we're very strong on is around our diversity and inclusiveness. So just as mental health can impact anybody in our community, we feel that we should, our volunteer workforce should reflect everybody in the community. So we have different ages, gender identities, cultural backgrounds, all that stuff, and everybody's sort of welcome in that regard.
When new volunteers are onboarded, what's the duration of the training and what does training involve?
We provide a day's worth of training in two parts. So we do one part online and the other is a face-to-face at our office in Fairfield. Within the training, we explore what it means to feel connected versus feeling isolated. We look at the common barriers to social inclusion that a lot of participants experience. We look a lot at boundaries, how to set boundaries with others and maintain them. We go through the program guidelines, and of course we always do some practice scenarios to give people a little bit of an opportunity to put their skills to work.
And what was your experience like completing the training, Hans? And after, you know, following the training, what was it like being paired with a participant in the community for the first time?
I thought the training was really, really good. The support generally is fantastic if you need it, you know, or you need to clarify issues or you have questions. The training was good in that it really gave you a lot as a participant, a lot of, protective sort of lessons and teaching. And on top of that, there are modules that you are either mandated or encouraged to do on the Wellways, I think it's Workday website. And those again are things that, you know, I thought I knew a lot of those things. And of course I had to do a couple of the modules and questions a couple of times because I didn't know. So I tend to, you know, people, I think some people like me coming to it as an older person might think, no, I know this, but the training was really good in pointing out there are things you need to be aware of and no, you don't know them all. And it was also good in offering that backup support if you weren't sure what to do or how to step around a situation.
And being, what was it like when you were first, connected with a participant in the community?
Very, very interesting. I'm a fairly relaxed character, and Lauren said this to me, "Oh, you seem so confident about when you meet someone," and it sort of felt strange because in the back of my mind I know I'm meeting someone who's just come out of a, you know, either a park or a serious situation. And I just to be able to break that ice, I just started talking and, you know, had to rein that back a bit because, you know, I've been told I can talk underwater. So but it's just having a go at it even when you're nervous and just trying to break the ice and looking at the person across from you and thinking, you're just another person, you're just another bloke I've met, you know, let's see what we have in common.
What was your experience like with the training, Bridget?
Yeah, I mean, it was a while ago now, but I felt really supported going into it. And, you know, after the initial training, you have like catch-ups throughout the year, whether that be online or sometimes we have in-person catch-ups with the volunteers too. So there's sort of opportunities throughout the year to refresh your memory with the training and learn new things and connect with other volunteers and learn from each other as well. So you're constantly supported. And I found Leanne, I'm sure Lauren's the same, are really supportive throughout the whole way. So if you ever have like questions and concerns that come up, they're always there to help along the way too.
Can Lauren, I just add something, Mark, to what Bridget was saying?
Oh, please.
Thank you, Bridget, for saying that. Do you feel supported? That's good to hear. It's an interesting volunteer experience in the sense that it's quite isolated. It's one-on-one. A lot of people go into volunteering and, you know, they might be in a kitchen or in a community house or in a centre where there's a whole team of people, whereas this is very much about people, the volunteer being out in community, and a lot of the contact really is only with the volunteer coordinator. So it's important for us for people to feel part of a team, and that's why we try and have as many activities as we can, and people can access other elements of WellWays, whether it's online learning or things like that, to expand their sort of knowledge and skills. So, yeah, that's why we try and bring people together, because often they do share a bit of a background. In fact, I've had a couple of volunteers that ended up being in the same year at uni studying the same course and actually didn't know they were Link volunteers till they met up. So that was lovely.
All right. How do you put together, you know, how do you get the how do you get all the volunteers together, you know, interacting with each other, being as it can be a pretty sort of isolating sort of, they're kind of doing their own thing out in the community. What's the process like of getting everybody in the one room sort of talking to each other and sharing each other's, you know, experiences with one another? What does that look like, and what do you usually get up to?
Well, time is always of the essence for everybody, I think. So it's finding the right time, whether that's, you know, out of work hours or on weekends. And with students, it's always hard to know their uni. So I guess we're not going to capture everybody all the time. And I think, again, it's about being inclusive, as in having different activities. Some people feel quite comfortable being in social spaces. Some other people might prefer something that's a little bit more, not solo, but a bit more focused. Like we had a trivia and pizza night. And that was really good because the nerd dealt with the nerd element of volunteers and was a bit of fun as well. But it had a focus for the night, so pressure was off.
If anyone in the community would like to be connected with a Life in Community volunteer, how would they go about doing that?
Well, the Link program is currently offered in Victoria. It's offered to people who have just completed a park stay. So unfortunately, it is only open to people who have sort of come through that channel and stayed at one of the four parks that Leanne and I are based at. There is a variation of the Link program which operates in the ACT. WellWays run a Link program in that state, which also offers group programs as well. But yeah, currently in Victoria, it's just sort of an offshoot of the park programs.
And lastly, why should people volunteer with Life in Community?
I had a little think about that and I thought, well, you know, it's the standard stuff about volunteering. What you get a chance to meet new people, you develop skills. You actually learn a bit about yourself, I think, in that. And as simple as it might sound, you're actually just making the world a better place. So why not volunteer is my answer to that.
And what about your thoughts, Lauren?
I just think it's a really wholesome program. It, you know, it gives people the chance to actually change someone's life for the better, and you don't need to have a qualification or a particular skill set necessarily. It's just a chance to, yeah, make a difference and meet a person that you might not have met otherwise.
And Hans, why do you feel that people should volunteer with the Life and Community Program?
I think why people should volunteer or should give it a go is because we often underestimate what we can offer other people. And we're talking about participants who have had, you know, mental health challenges and possibly other types of challenges in their life as well. And sometimes someone who's willing to sit there and have a go and be a year and share activities and just show that little bit of confidence. It's, I think, in my experience, too many people doubt themselves and don't try or do things because they doubt themselves. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling, you know, or, a, you know, prophecy. But I just say to people, all ages, and I'm rapt that there's so many young people, whether it's through study or whatever, who get involved in the program, because it's really important for people who are struggling. And we've all been at different levels of that in our lives, to see a stranger who's willing to take time, you know. So I think it's extremely important to just give it a go. It's a, you know, I know it's a well-used phrase, but you never know what confidence you're giving and what sort of support you're giving to someone just by sitting down and spending an hour a week with them.
And Bridget, do you have any thoughts about why people should volunteer for Life in Community?
Yeah, look, I think it's really easy. It's a really minimal time commitment. So even if you have just like 1 or 2 hours in a week, is a great way to just feel like you're making an impact on your world. And you are, even if it's just in one person. Like Hans said, you shouldn't underestimate how valuable and how important it is to that person that you're showing up for them and that you care enough to be there. It also just, I found like it's expanded my world too, because all of a sudden you have all these new connections like Leanne and Lauren and other volunteers. Like your world gets bigger and you build this relationship with this participant, even though it's temporary. You also might build relationships with people at the groups you attend, and it does just really expand your world and add, I guess, richness to your life.
All right. A big thank you to Lauren, Leanne and Bridget and Hans for joining us at Brainwaves this evening and sharing all of their thoughts about volunteering and, teaching us a bit about the Life and Community Program. It's been wonderful to have you on.
Thanks, Mark, and happy National Volunteer Week to everybody, and thank you particularly to our volunteers because they're fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thanks for persisting, Mark, too, with my issues.
No problem.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bridget.
Yeah, see you all.
See you. Bye-bye. Thanks, Hans.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.